Mr. Abish, Reel 11. Could you explain what happened to you in Prague?
When we arrived in Prague, apparently only 100 could go, 50 girls and 50 boys. And it was very strict. We had to have medicals. We had to have x-rays and make sure that we were absolutely healthy. Those that they couldn't pass the medicals weren't taken. Eventually we came in front of a committee, some people from England. It so happens my father's cousin, who was a doctor, who was also on the committee. And he asked me if I want to go to England. I said, yes. He said, you know, your cousin has already gone before, three months before. So I said, yes, and I was chosen to go to England. After we stayed there for a couple of weeks in Prague, we were going roaming around, seeing museums, all kinds of things, and made lots of friends now, because some of them come from different parts of Sudetenland. They were distributed in different areas, so there were already more boys, more life. And eventually we were taken to Prague station, and we were put two in a compartment, two boys, you know, like with two to each seat. Long seat was one like a one. So to each compartment, two. And there was attached to a kitchen with the train. And then we left through Germany. We were traveling through Germany, and after 2 days or so, we arrived in Brussels. By the way, when we passed through Nuremberg, it was actually, we went to town in the time when the trials were on, the Nuremberg trials. And eventually we got to Brussels, and from Brussels we were taken to Paris. We were split up into three groups, and we were taken out to Paris to see the museums and all kinds of things. We played football. And we were quite hungry. They didn't give us enough food, because we were doing a lot of sports and we were roaming around the place. And then we used to visit each other to the different sections where we were distributed. And then one day we were back together, and we were taken by train to one of the French ports. I don't know if it was Calais or any of them. And we were actually on June the 6th, 1946, exactly 2 years in reverse. We were going to England. Remember, there was a lot of Air Force people on the boat and so on. Never been on water like that, or the Channel or any sea. I was perfectly all right, but most of them got sick. It was quite rough, and everybody was all right. And then I got worse than everybody else. I got seasick. You know, I remember they were giving us cheese and things like that. It wasn't very good for that type of journey. So we arrived in New Haven, and once we stopped, it was back all right. So when we came in the New Haven, I remember the British police in the bobbies, and they asked us the sign form, make crosses. I said, why do we want to make us crosses? They said we couldn't read or write. Of course we could read and write, so of course we signed our names properly. And they gave us tea. Of course we never tasted tea with milk. And anyway, it was very well, we were very well accepted. And then there were some people already from London to come and fetch us.
Who were these people from London?
From the Jewish shelter, from the Bloomsbury House, you know, and there was very people that were doing the work. And we were taken by train to Victoria. And that day it was raining and sunshine and raining. And we arrived in the bombed-out east end of London, in Mansell Street, in a place called the Jewish Shelter, where the Jewish Shelter must have been for many years, because it's cold, because from various parts of the world, when they came Jews, this is where they were first. We were 100 of us, and we were split up in four floors. Each floor either had 25 boys or 25 girls. The things that the staff couldn't forget is, because we had food already in Czechoslovakia, and we were all right, but in France itself, we were sort of hungry all the time. So when we arrived in England, and it was already, I remember that day, it was a big parade, because it was VE Day 2, and we saw the King and Queen, and all the Empire troops, you know, from the Empire that was marching, because not being very far from the city of London. So it was quite the day at the time. The first thing they did is to bring us food. And as they brought us the plates on the table, we used to hide them underneath the table. So they had to bring more. There's a lot of people helping, people who were doing, helping out. Anyway, we settled down there. The next day they gave us pocket money, 5 shillings, in a little wallet. So we went to the lane, we nearly spent it all. So they were going along. Then they would they come to teach, to go to sort of ski and to tell teachers English. First words we learned, early to bed, early to rise, makes you healthy, wealthy and wise. We couldn't speak any English at all when we came. And, we started slowly, and then all the cinemas were filled with us free. The buses, we didn't, it was free for us. I remember they filled the Jewish theater with us. I always spoke other languages, but English we couldn't speak yet. There were one or two who could speak a few words.
Did you have an identification card to get you into cinemas and on buses free?
No, we were going with people that took us. Also, I remember, actually, in the first 2 weeks that I was in England, we were taken to Sadler's Wells, we were in Covent Garden, into various places that rich people came and fetched and took us to out. One rich gentleman that took us out to Hove in Brighton to the seaside, a whole busload of us, about 24 of us or something. People doing all kinds of things. In the meantime, my cousin was here in King's Langley in a hostel, and of course I met her here. And then after we were getting, we were like terrorists there, because we were very, very surreal thing. So first of all, after 2 weeks, we went on strike. We want more money. So they give us 76 pocket money.
You said you went on strike. What did you do?
All kinds of, we were revolting, rebellious. All kinds of things were happening because the police couldn't keep up with us because we were such naughty fellows. You see, there were slightly younger ones, boys, then slightly younger girls, then the around my age, and then we were in the upper floor and the fourth floor. Of course, we met all the people in the surrounding area, the locals, and we used to take hoses and put the water into the next floor to the girls, and there was all kind of rows. And when the police came up, everybody was snatching away, nothing has happened. up to all kind of tricks.
And how did the local population take to you? What was your
reaction?
Oh,
a lot of girls coming around there and telling about the bombing. It was very poor, that area. The levity is still outside. It was fairly poor area. And I remember we went to Brady's Club, that's in the East End, and then I was the first one to go to engineering school somewhere near Stepney, further up Commercial Road. And I remember they were filling the theatres out, the cinemas in the afternoon. And actually, through cinemas, you can learn English. That helped in a way. And we had lessons, all kind of lessons, English, arithmetic and all these things. Lots of people came to do help. Actually, before the winter of 1946, I started working in a garage for 25 shillings a week, doing all kind of dirty jobs, because I really wanted to be independent, very fast. So eventually, a group of us, five of us, got together and we went to live in Stamford Hill. In the lodgings. So what happened was, you were given £6. If you only earned £2.50 or £3, a register letter came from the Bloomsbury House to give you the difference to be able to live. So then I moved to another garage. Worked in a garage in Stamford Hill and earned £3 a week, and I was given the difference back, and we had to pay the lodgings. From there, in beginning of 1946, things were pretty bad in England in 1947-10. Very cold winter, fuel strike, coal is short and this is short and that. And even bread was difficult to get. But then I moved to Maidervale to Warwick Avenue, to lodging Warwick Avenue. And I also started in a garage there off Elgin Avenue. And I had problems there, because my English, I started to speak a bit of English, but I had a problem there. There were many mechanics who tried to help me. One of the mechanics, who was an ex-Palestinian policeman, started harping whether I'm Jewish, and started in that business. And then he gave me trouble, and then I went up. The governor was a gentleman boss. He wasn't a big garage. And I said, I wanted my cards, please. I didn't say why or what. I just phoned up Bloomsbury House, I'm out of a job. So they got me a job to learn typewriter mechanic. So started back at £2.50 a week in Blackfriars. It's a big company making typewriters. So I started learning typewriters. After about a year, that was 48, and I remember the governor coming, heard you were quite intelligent, and I used to go to Bank of England to do the machines there and various other places. And they brought in a lot of machines from Erfurt, from Germany, that the Russians couldn't use, and we did all the retyping for the British market because there was a shortage of typewriters. But one day I remember, there were about 40 mechanics there, and I was front bench by the foreman, favorite. So one day I said, I'm not going to come in the next 2 days. So the foreman said, why not? I said, it's New Year. He laughed. He said, New Year's after Christmas. So I said, it's a Jewish New Year. Again, he didn't know I was Jewish. But what actually happened when I came back? After 2 days, I was sitting in the back with the Africans. Right? Started trouble then. All right. So happens I had boxing lessons in Primrose, in the club that we formed in England in the beginning of 47. So after we left, all the boys and girls who came to England, most of them, after we did whatever we did during the day, it was a meeting place called, was formed the Primrose Club. It was very important because there we had our food very cheap, and you could have any kind of lessons. Classical music, dancing, anything you want. We formed football teams. We had 5 football teams, and we were playing against various clubs, against Jewish clubs and various things. And we even won the league 1 year, which was 48, right?
What was your reaction to this anti-Semitic feeling?
Well, I was very surprised. I thought, again, that they knew I was Jewish. I didn't hide anything. The fact that I don't particularly look Jewish, maybe so, but made a point of it in future that if anybody, everywhere I meet or sing, that I would let them know that I am one.
Were you shocked, though, in the light of what you've been through in the war and the British knowledge of it?
Very little shocks me amongst, I must say one thing. As a boy, when I came out of the camps, I remember thinking, if I can find 1 out of 100 a good person, then it's worthwhile living. But if I don't, then I had to hate all humanity, right, as such. So that is the way it is, right? So I made up my mind, either I'm going to live for the past or I'm going to live for the future. So I had to break there and just hoping to live for the future and don't live for the past.
Would you say that the experience of the camps changed your attitude in any other way?
But you see so many things. You see good people and you see bad people. So where you start weighing up. So as I said, if you find so many from 100 good ones, it's worthwhile living. Otherwise, it's not.
Okay, thank you very much indeed. But that